Support for NPR comes from ADP. Say you're in HR and a solar flare adds an extra hour to each day. How would this impact business? ADP designs forward-thinking solutions to help your business take on the next anything. ADP, always designing for people.
This summer, millions of us got decked out in our silver, shiny, shimmering best to attend Beyoncé's fabulous Renaissance World Tour. We got cozy with Miss Carter for a medley of hits old and new. There were stunning visuals, an array of costume changes, and occasional star cameos. There was Blue Ivy. And of course, there was the Queen herself. I'm Aisha Harris, and a little birdie told me it's Virgo season, and we're talking about Beyoncé's Renaissance Tour on NPR's Pop Culture Happy Hour.
This message comes from NPR sponsor HBO. From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr., The Sympathizer is the new HBO original limited series based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel. On The Sympathizer podcast, host Philip Nguyen joins the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen to discuss the making of this historic series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer Sundays exclusively on Max, and listen to The Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
Support for NPR and the following message come from the American Cancer Society. Dr. Alpa Patel leads a team that researches cancer risk factors, and she shares how a new study aims to impact an underrepresented community.
My greatest hope for the Voices of Black Women study is that it will help us understand and identify culturally tailored ways to change and really eliminate the unacceptable disparities for future generations of Black women as it relates to cancer.
To learn more, go to voices.cancer.org. This message comes from NPR sponsor Teladoc Health. There are lots of reasons for wanting to be healthy: family, work, living a fuller life. Teladoc Health understands. Whether you have diabetes, high blood pressure, or just need to manage your weight, Teladoc Health can help. Visit teladochealth.com/whatsyourwhy for more information. That's TELADOC Health/whatsyourwhy.
Joining me today is Switched On Pop producer Rihanna Cruz. Welcome back, Rihanna.
Happy to be here.
Also with us is journalist, media personality, and co-host of the Recap podcast, We're Just Like That, Shar Gissell. Welcome back to you too, Shar.
Hey, hey. Thanks for having me.
Oh, man. Are we all just like still on a high from this show?
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes.
I know. I definitely feel like I am. So the Renaissance World Tour kicked off in Europe in May and is winding down now with just a handful of U.S. stops left. This is reportedly Beyoncé's highest grossing tour yet. Billboard's projected it's going to make just a measly $500 million, nothing special, you know. And Renaissance has been unlike any other Beyoncé experience, a truly communal and social media hyped dance party. The Queen asked attendees to dress up in silver in honor of her birthday. Her eldest daughter, Blue Ivy, has become a regular fixture at many of the shows, as has the viral mute challenge. I mean, even if you haven't been to Club Renaissance, you've probably seen it all over your social media feeds. So before we kick off a deeper conversation about this, I just have to ask you both two very important questions. And I'll kick it off to you first, Shar. Which city and which night did you attend? And did your crowd pass or fail the mute challenge?
Well, Aisha, I went twice.
Ooh, so did I.
So the first time I went was London's first show, May 29th of this year. I went abroad.
You fancy.
Oh, yes. Listen, I had to make a way, sis. And then I went to the birthday show on Beyoncé's birthday, September 4th.
Jealous.
And London did not pass the mute challenge. But in fairness, the mute challenge was not really a thing, you know, back in May when this kicked off.
That's
but
true.
LA did a pretty good job on her birthday. I, you know, will not hold back that I did shush someone in my section.
Okay.
Who apparently was oblivious to the mute challenge. And it was a strong shh. But, you know, she shushed it up and we passed.
I mean, look, we may be back outside, but we're not all extremely online. So,
right.
Rihanna, how about you? When did you go and Did you pass or fail?
I went in LA, also an LA show. And I think we passed. I think we did a pretty good job.
Nice.
There were people in my section who had shirts on that says, when Beyonce says mute, everybody STFU.
They came prepared.
Yeah, that was like kind of the vibe. You know, because there's always like the premature like shriek or anything when you realize that you're doing it right. Yeah. But I think we did a pretty good job.
Yeah, yeah. I went twice as well. I went to one of the Vegas shows, her first Vegas show. And then I also went to the one in Santa Clara / San Francisco. They're calling it San Francisco, the Bay Area. I went to the Bay Area, yeah. One at Levi's Stadium. And I actually was Googling and I saw that several news outlets were like, Santa Clara fails the test. And I went back and looked at my video because I specifically took video of this. And I don't think it was any better or worse than the other videos I've seen elsewhere. Like, mm-hmm. It was pretty quiet for about 2 to 3 seconds. And then, like, you could hear some prolonged screams in the distance. But I feel like the Bay deserved a little bit of credit for actually going silent.
Yeah.
But maybe that's just me. So to get more deep on this, like, I want to talk about sort of what this experience is, because this feels like Beyonce at her peak, but I also feel as though like every time Beyonce does something new, it feels like her peak or at a peak. And where does this fit in on your understanding of Beyonce, where she is at now? Like, what was this show like for you? I'm not sure if either of you, I'm assuming you both have been to other shows. I don't want to assume, but.
I haven't. Oh. Yeah, this was my first Beyonce show.
Ooh. Well, Rihanna, let me kick it to you. So yeah. What was it like to experience this show and see her live for the first time?
I had watched Homecoming like last month, you know, for the first time.
Wow.
So seeing that and then going into Renaissance, I had this picture in my head of what Beyonce shows would be, and I wasn't disappointed. I think Homecoming is such a pinnacle of her career and live artistry and concerts, but I also feel like Renaissance matched that, you know, and it's also in something entirely different.
Yeah.
You know, it's more dance party, it's less reflective, I think, but still incredible. I don't know. Speechless is literally how I would describe it.
Yeah. And, you know, for me, it's kind of the opposite, because Beyonce has had my heart for decades now. With respect to Beyonce and her greatness, I am a huge Destiny's Child fan.
Same,
as a matter of fact,
same.
They were my first concert ever. Like, my first concert when I was like 12 or 13, I want to say, was the TRL tour.
Oh,
so that was like
goodness.
20 years ago.
TRL.
Yes. When they headlined. So I've been to every Beyonce show except for two. And, you know, with each show, you know, she tops herself. The production gets better. The vocals are always top tier.
Yeah.
The choreography. I have noticed different changes. Like, you know, now that she's a 42-year-old mom of three, you know, the breaks are a little bit longer, because when she was a teenager, she, Michelle and Kelly were having 30-second, you know, costume changes and right back on stage.
Yeah.
And now, you know, she's earned her right to take her time and do what she needs to do. The show is still spectacular, though.
Yeah. I mean, even then, though, I feel as though the breaks aren't that long. They're maybe 5 minutes, you know, in between each section. And what she does with those moments is she really milks the visual spectacle, because within the show, we're seeing a lot of futuristic moments projected onto the screen. We're seeing Beyonce sort of giving off Metropolis vibes, like robot.
I was literally going to say that. The main thing that I clocked was like the Metropolis references, which I thought were very cool.
Yeah.
Because that's like futuristic woman, you know?
Yeah. She's very tapped into that.
Yeah.
It's interesting, Shara, because I'm kind of in the same boat as you, where she was one of my very first concerts, at least the first concert that like I wanted to go to and my parents didn't want to go to.
Yeah.
So I saw her first with Destiny's Child, the original four, literally months before they had the whole rearrangement scrambling on the TLC fan mail tour. So they opened for that group.
Okay.
And then it was like maybe 15, 16 more years before I saw her again live for the Formation tour. But I, you know, I've been following her ever since. She's mastered the art of self-mythology and self-referencing. She's done a really good job of bringing in all of these different elements of the people that she's looked up to, the artists that she's looked up to, while also really making sure that she's embedded in that history as well.
Mm-hmm.
At my show, there's a Tina Turner tribute. Mm-hmm. There's references to some house classics like Percolator in My House. You've got a little bit of the Jackson 5, I Want You Back, playing in the background of Love on Top. Like, I think all of those sort of references are just really fun to play with. And I really enjoyed seeing that and seeing her just have fun and command the stage in a way that she's always been able to do, but now it's just, she just luxuriates in it a lot more.
Yes, she has a lot of fun during this tour. I'm glad that you noted that, because it does seem as if she's shredded kind of like the perfectionist bubble that she put herself in.
Yeah.
She's laughing a lot more, like things are happening, things are going haywire, and she's just having genuine fun. At least that's what I see from the audience perspective.
Yes, yes, yes. I'm also curious, you know, what you thought about the representation that we're seeing in this show, especially queer representation. She's always been sort of a queer icon in many ways, but this is sort of her most open and most obvious gesture towards queer representation. And I'm curious as to how that manifested in the performance that we saw at these shows for you.
So I'm going to out myself here. When Renaissance came out, I had my reservations. There was sort of an underlying feeling for me of like, is this genuine? Mm-hmm. And I think like Beyonce being the sort of one woman corporation kind of musical entity that she is, I had my reservations about her pivot to house. And I warmed up to the album over time. Now I absolutely love it. But seeing it in concert kind of unlocked a sort of level of appreciation for me, where when I saw it, I was like, oh, right, like Beyonce's not half-assing this. Like she is fully committing to the sort of queer and trans representation that an ode to house music gives. And I really respected that. Like, it really unlocked doors for me watching, like, the stage devolve into, like, a ballroom voguing contest. Like mm-hmm. that really did it for me. And hearing the other house songs that she incorporated, like you said, like Percolator and My House, like, I was so gagged when My House started playing. Like, I was like, oh, wow. Like, yes. She's really, really doing it. And I don't know if it was at your shows as well, but the last image on the screen is Beyonce with her uncle.
That was her mom, Miss Tina.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that's Miss Tina.
Yeah, a young Miss Tina, I think.
They look very much alike.
Yes,
but
they do.
Yeah, yeah. I thought that was really sweet.
You know, for me, I feel the exact same. I thought the representation was on point. I know that a lot of people did question the reference as to like, well, where did Uncle Johnny come from? And Beyonce's referenced Uncle Johnny before during her GLAAD acceptance speech in 2019, I believe, when she and Jay-Z were in Los Angeles receiving an award for their advocacy. And so Beyonce's always, as you mentioned, Aisha, been immersed in some degree in queer culture, mm-hmm. whether we're talking Freakum mm-hmm. Dress and B-Day and Single Ladies, you know, on the Tyra Banks show when she had two male background dancers. And so I thought that, you know, even hearkening back to the album with T.S. Madison and Honey Dijon and Kevin Aviance, like the representation was on point and it felt mm-hmm. like she committed mm-hmm. to it. I do think that some of the criticism that she received with the L.A. shows in particular, the first two on September 1st and September 2nd, I thought that it was valid. It was laced in, you know, DJ Khaled opening and some of the acts that he brought with him. It was like, okay.
Wait, DJ Khaled opened? I missed this.
I got DJ Khaled. He brought out Big Sean, OT Genesis, Roddy Ricch, YG.
Lil Wayne, Offset.
Yeah.
But the pushback was Renaissance is specifically catered to the LGBTQ plus community. And then when you have someone like an Offset who's on stage, who has a bar that says something like, I don't vibe with queers. It's just a disconnect there. So I felt that, you know, I love Beyonce with all of my heart, but no one is above reproach. Right. I think she'd even agree to that. And so it felt like a big misstep. But other than that, I feel like it's been flawless. It's been fun. It's been a safe space. I've been loving the costumes, the fashions. Everybody's been having a good time.
I think safe space is also a really great way to put it, because I was with my friends who are all queer, including myself, and it felt very comfortable where we were walking around and, like, you know, in everybody's outfits, like, it just felt really cozy, you know, for lack of a better term. Like, it was nice.
Yes, the outfits at my shows were fantastic. And I'm glad you mentioned that, Shar, because I hadn't seen that criticism because I hadn't even heard that DJ Khaled had opened. But I did see a little bit of criticism online. It was very measured. Trace Lissette, the actress, I think a lot of people know her from Transparent. She talked about on Instagram how she wished she had seen more explicitly trans drag queen representation on stage and like what that might mean to see that for someone like Beyonce to put that out there. And so, like you said, Beyonce's not above reproach. And, you know, I know the Beehive doesn't necessarily like to hear that, or some members of the Beehive don't like to hear that. But, you know, I think that we should be able to critique the people who we also admire and love. And I think that Beyonce falls under that too.
Yes.
Right.
I mean, speaking of which, I am also curious about how you feel about Blue Ivy.
Icon, legend, star.
Yes, yes. It was interesting because this is, you know, she's popped up in music videos and she won a Grammy with her mom. So it's not like it's her first time performing, but this is does feel like sort of a debutante ball sort of way in which she has been popping up in these shows. And I don't know, what do you think about the way that this not only establishes Beyonce's legacy, but also she's so passionate about her family and passionate about her lineage and has talked about it in many songs, and how that kind of manifested itself with Blue Ivy showing up on stage for these shows?
Listen, we knew Blue Ivy, little Blue Ivy, was a dancer when she was enrolled in the Debbie Allen Dance Academy doing the chocolate nutcracker on Christmas. Again, as someone who saw Blue perform back in May compared to seeing her September 4th, she has gotten more comfortable. And I always remind people that this is an 11-year-old little girl performing in front of tens of thousands of people.
Hundreds of thousands.
So before you form your lips to say anything, factor that in, because a lot of people can't even stand up and give a presentation in front of the class. And then Blue is out there killing it. Beyonce, on her birthday show, she said, "Give it up for the legendary Blue Ivy Carter." So the ball is in motion and Blue seems so comfortable. She seems so confident. There are like two dancers that seem like they really like watch over her. Her ear monitors came out during the birthday show. And the way that the dancers who work with Blue were able to catch on and like rescue that from being a moment, quote unquote, was just masterful to witness.
Blue Ivy got the loudest applause on my night, too, I have to say, because I went on the second, so I didn't get Diana Ross or any birthday shenanigans. But Blue Ivy, I don't know if she does this at every show, but she pulled out her in-ear monitors to hear the sort of roar of SoFi. And you could see it on her face. She was so happy and wowed and overjoyed. And it really warmed my heart. She got the standing O that lasted for what felt like a minute.
Yeah. It's been really nice to see the support that she's gotten. I will say, I just hope this is still fun for her. Because like you said, Shar, she is 11. And I feel like there's just so much pressure that comes with her position. And I just hope she's still having fun. I hope she gets a lot of time to just like chill. And thank goodness for those dancers who seem to be watching over her.
Yeah.
I mean, looking at the dancers, it felt like a very tight-knit community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
On tour. And maybe I'm just like projecting because I'm like, wow, like that seems like a family.
It did. I agree. It did.
Yeah, like there's a little looseness to the way that they're interacting with one another and the way that they're dancing. And it felt very tight-knit in a way that was communicated on stage.
Yeah, absolutely. Do we have a favorite moment from the show?
I was so gagged when she did Alien Superstar with the Sweet Dreams instrumental. Because I'm a Sasha Fierce supporter. I love that record. And every time she incorporates it into her live shows or just even like mentions it, you know, like brings it up, I get so happy. So hearing that, my partner was like, "I have never heard you scream like that at a concert before." Because I was so taken aback. I was like, "Oh my God, she's doing Sweet Dreams." I was so gagged.
Yes. For me, I gotta say, I am one of the thousands of Black girls, I imagine, or Black women rather, who shed a tear during Church Girl when I first saw it in London. I just was weeping. But for me, my favorite moment was because I was at the birthday show. So I got a, you know, she does a birthday speech, which was so beautiful about reminding us how it's beautiful to turn our lemons into lemonade. And she thanks her mother and her father and LaToya Luckett and LaTavia Robertson and Michelle and Kelly.
"I'm thankful to be able to provide a safe space for all of y'all. I'm thankful for music and for the ability to heal myself through music, which then heals all of you."
And, you know, Diana Ross surprises us. That was amazing. You know, Kendrick was there as well, but Diana was the shining star for me.
"Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you."
have yet to see any Kendrick videos, but I've seen all the Diana.
Yeah.
Right.
But seeing those two on stage, seeing, you know, the OG Supreme and the OG Child of Destiny, so to speak, on stage together was just, that's my hallmark of the whole thing.
Me and my friends have been obsessed with this TikTok theory that Renaissance Tour is a metaphor for The Wiz.
I saw that.
Okay, sorry. Yeah. Can I interrupt? Because my favorite moment I was going to say is the very end. She's wearing that shiny, shimmery, glittery dress. And then she's like straight up in the air at my Vegas show while she's like floating through the air. It's like, happy birthday, so-and-so. And it's Virgo season. She's like, oh, I see you. It was very hilarious. It was giving me like Michael Jackson vibes, like in a nice way.
They are both Virgos.
Yeah,
I know. But it also reminded me of Lena Horne in The Wiz, because she kind of had that glittery, majestic thing. And you know how in The Wiz, she's got the stars behind her and she's wearing the big headpiece. And I was like, this feels like The Wiz. I wrote this in my notes.
Right. Me and my roommates, we watched it last night because we have been talking about it nonstop. Yeah. And then when she brought out Diana Ross, we all were like, going crazy, because we were like, yes, like Diana Ross, like The Wiz, it all makes sense.
Yes. There's always a little bit of Diana, Tina, and Michael in any performance that she's giving. She's almost always referencing, if not all of them, one or two of them. It was interesting to see two of her shows, not back to back, but like with only less than a week in between, because I could see, you know, it's a tight ship, but at the same time, I was really impressed by how there were little moments that were very different from each show. And she was ad-libbing. And like, she's not a robot, you know?
And all three dates of LA got what the fans are calling the big three, which is Thick, All Up in Your Mind, and Drunk in Love.
Right.
I was so angry. I saw a clip of that. I was like, I don't remember there being like a Fosse big spender poll there. And then it clicked on the sound and I was like, she did Thick? What? How did I miss Thick? I was glad we got America Has a Problem, though.
Oh,
like,
yes.
That is my favorite off Renaissance. And
absolutely.
Her different outfits for each of those were great. Like, in one, she was actually a bee.
Yes.
And it was great.
That was my favorite. Also, this is a question. Maybe you guys know. Is she changing up the designers every date on tour? Because she had a beautiful outfit at my show that was, like, a riding cap with a multicolored, like, bodysuit.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah. Some of the outfits were the same at both shows for me, but then a lot of them were different.
It's wild to witness.
That's incredible. I love when artists on a tour do things that, like, reward repeat concert goers.
Yeah.
You know, because she's not really changing the set list that much other than, like, the big three that you mentioned. Yeah. But the outfits are like, oh, my God, like, I want to see what she wears.
Right, right.
Well, my hope is that, look, she's called this Renaissance Part 1. I don't know if we're ever getting part two or three, but like my hope is that maybe part two or three is the actual just a homecoming style video, like taking pieces of every show and putting it all together into one long concert film. We did hear about Taylor Swift having an Eras concert film
in October.
So I feel as though Beyonce, obviously, she's had cameras recording this entire experience. So fingers crossed, especially for those who aren't able to go to the show, that they are able to watch in this way, at least. We want to know what you think about the Renaissance Tour. Find us at facebook.com/PCHH. And that brings us to the end of our show. Rihanna Cruz, Char Giselle, thanks so much for being here. This is a blast.
I had so much fun.
I could keep talking for 2 more hours, so thanks for having me.
I know.
No, literally.
It's Renaissance.
Thank you.
It's Renaissance. And we also want to take a moment to thank our Pop Culture Happy Hour Plus subscribers. We appreciate you so much for showing your support of NPR. And if you haven't signed up yet, want to show your support and listen to the show without any sponsor breaks, head over to plus.npr.org/happyhour or visit the link in our show notes. This episode was produced by Liz Metzger and edited by Jessica Reedy, and Hello Come In provides our theme music. Thank you for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. I'm Aisha Harris, and we'll see you all tomorrow.
This message comes from NPR sponsor, the Capital One Venture X Card. Earn unlimited 2x miles on everything you buy. Plus, get access to a $300 annual credit for bookings through Capital One Travel. What's in your wallet? Terms apply. Details at CapitalOne.com.